Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Ellie Schwartz, debut author of Finding Perfect. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 299 of the podcast with Ellie Schwartz, debut author of Finding Perfect. I love Ellie's book. I really love it. It's quiet and powerful. It has something to say, and sometimes it speaks through pink lemonade mix, or matching socks, or worn-out erasers. If you have read it, there's no doubt in my mind that you love it as well. And if you have not yet had the chance, you're really going to enjoy it. But first, please allow me the honor of introducing you to Ellie. Here's episode number 299 of the podcast with Ellie Schwartz. Welcome to the podcast, Ellie Schwartz. The crowd goes wild. Yay!
Thank you, Matthew. I'm so excited to be here.
Okay, first off, I'm glad you're here. I need to describe the crowd, because when I say the crowd goes wild, Ellie, I have people around me, myself included, that are freaking out about your book. It is legit good. I'm telling you, like, everyone at All the Wonders today, when I was talking about who are you interviewing tonight, everyone was like, oh my word, we love Ellie Schwartz. So we in just the group of friends that I have, we share a lot of love for your book. And to me, it's mind-blowing that this is just your first outing. I can't wait for your career. This is so exciting. So welcome and thank you for sharing Finding Perfect with the world.
Thank you so much, Matthew. That was so nice and so kind for somebody who has been on this journey for about 15 years. That feels really good. Yes, it's been a long, winding road. It may be my debut, but it wasn't my first rodeo. So I am so happy to be here. And I'm so happy that you guys, that Finding Perfect and Molly's journey has resonated with you.
I would love, Ellie, if you don't mind, if we can just start off the conversation this way. Could you share with the people listening your book talk for Finding Perfect?
Sure. Finding Perfect is about 12-year-old Molly, whose mom leaves the family to take a job. She's the juice lady in Toronto. And Molly's life spins out of control. She wants her mom back, so she figures, hey, I'm going to devise a plan. I'm going to win the middle school slam poetry competition. And of course my mom will come back, because there's a big banquet at the end with fancy tablecloths and turkey, and she'll come back. Complicating Molly's plan is that she has undiagnosed OCD. So through her friendships and her relationships with her family, throughout her story, you see, read, and feel how Molly's OCD is escalating and impacting all aspects of her life. And I worked with OCD specialists to make sure and authenticate Molly's discovery and manifestation and ultimate recovery from OCD.
I think that the way you said that she had, how did you say it, like escalating awareness yes. of her OCD. I thought the way that not only does Molly see that, does Molly recognize that in herself, but we as the reader see that alongside her, that the way that I'm sure you crafted that yes. to happen that way, it's beautiful, Ellie. It's one of the things that made me fall in love with Molly and fall in love with your story. It's done so well, and it's realized in a way, I feel, that we are discovering it alongside Molly. And so as a reader, for me to be able to share to you that it didn't feel ever like, well, Molly, hello, we've known this the whole time. I'm glad you're finally figuring it out. But rather that it was like we were finding answers alongside her. That was a really beautiful thing. And I think ultimately made me feel even closer to your main character. And that, again, that was something that you very expertly crafted. It was beautiful.
Thank you so much. It was so important to me for the reader to really be able to fully appreciate what Molly was going through and feeling while Molly was experiencing it. So, and that originally, Matthew, the book was written in first person flip narrative between Molly and Hannah. Oh. And so when I changed it into just Molly's voice, the importance and depth of this, of Molly's OCD and the discovery and the self-discovery on Molly's part became exponentially more important to the story.
Yes. So was this particular story something that's been, you know, that you've been living with for 15 years, or just the idea of coming to writing? Because I can see for me how, I mean, I can see that this is going to be a character that I'm going to be thinking about for 15 years. That this is a book that I'm going to be championing to readers for years. It's one of those books, Ellie. I mean, no pressure, buddy. I know this is your debut. No pressure. But it is something that I think because of the care that you approached the story with, it just feels like it's something you've thought about for a very long time. So I'm wondering, maybe the best way for me to ask is, when did Molly walk into your life? And when did you decide to write about her?
Molly came into my life the way most of my main characters seem to, and it's when I wake up. They're just kind of all of a sudden, they're in my head. I never really start a story with plot. It's always with a character, and it's the main character who just pops into my head, sort of tucks into my heart, and stays there till I tell their story. And that's what happened with Molly. And Molly came into my world about 6 years ago. My writing life started 15 years ago. One summer, I decided that this is what I wanted to do. And I wear a lot of hats. I have a business. I'm a lawyer. My business is not in the law anymore. But I juggle a lot of different things. And I decided I wanted to write. And I started. So my journey started 15 years ago, and Finding Perfect was actually the fifth book I wrote.
Wow. The fifth middle grade book. All middle grade, though. Are the other four novels that are stories that you had to write and like get out of your system in order to get to Finding Perfect? Or are those stories that you've held on to and are continuing to return to?
I think those were stories that taught me how to be a better writer. I mean, not at the time, but at the time I was like, these are great, I love them. They're stories I believed in. They're just, looking back now, I guess my eyes are more forward. I've mined those stories and taken the parts of them that I felt most connected to, But those stories are what taught me how to be a better writer, taught me how to listen to my heart when I'm writing, and taught me how to find and the voice of the main character. I think that's, at this point, I can say I'm not going back to them, but I thank them for what they gave me so I can move forward.
Yes. So Molly appeared one day when you woke up. I love that. My friend Ari Chung has a Storyteller Academy that he's running now. And one of the things that he talks about in his Storyteller Academy that he loves to share with other people is the importance he feels of a morning journal for almost the exact same thing you're saying, is that when we first wake up, when we're like just groggy, ideas seem to be right at the cusp of our brains there and are really great to grab and write down. So the idea that you said, like, you often wake up and your main characters are there, I love that. I love that thought's there. But
well, I do. I agree with him. I think your mind is clear, like your to-do list hasn't infiltrated your brain, and all the chaos that comes with everyone's normal activities and daily responsibilities hasn't tapped you on your shoulder yet.
Well, when not your to-do list and all those responsibilities tap you on your shoulder, but when a character like Molly does, how did she present herself to you? How did you get to know her? Was the OCD something that you were always aware of, or is that something that you discovered as you got to know her?
No, that was the first thing I knew about Molly, was that she had OCD, but that she didn't know she had OCD, but that she was scared. So I think that's why I just could never let go of this story. It was just, it felt too important to me. Once Molly kind of came into the picture, I started researching, you know, the market, and realized that there weren't any middle grade books about kids who had OCD.
Right.
And I was surprised, because when I was researching and when I did work with Dr. Trainer, who was the doctor that I had worked with about on learning more about OCD and authenticating the book, she said it's very often that OCD onset is in middle school or in, you know, late elementary. And so it was surprising to me that character hadn't come up, or a character that presented with OCD hadn't come up for the middle grade audience at the time.
Yeah.
And Kissing Doorknobs was the only one that had been written at, you know, when I first started. And that was more of a YA.
Yes. So you bring up an idea, a topic that I've been curious about for a while. And part of it is because of our work at All the Wonders with Books for Better, you know, that we're trying to champion these books that talk about diverse characters and talk about, I mean, you can already see then me just bringing this up, why we love Finding Perfect so much. But here's the thing that it calls to my attention. I'm going to just be frank, and you feel free to turn me away if you want, that's fine. But Ellie, sure. Is there anyone in your life that you pulled from directly for influence with Molly struggling with OCD?
So I have a number of people in my life who have OCD. I have adult friends who have it, and I have friends who have children who have it. So it was in knowing and loving and caring about these people who were in my life. One of the things that I found moving was that there was this huge discrepancy between the way they viewed themselves and the way the world viewed them. And it was sort of in that discrepancy where the heart of the story and Molly kind of found itself.
Go ahead. That's beautiful. Keep going.
And I used those experiences and the work that I did with Dr. Trainer to just make sure that Molly's character was true and authentic. And I felt like if I was going to dive into this topic and develop a character with OCD, then it was of utmost importance to me that I was respectful and that it was accurate and thoughtfully done.
Yes, absolutely. That respect, that the approach that that you've come at this from firsthand experience of knowing and loving individuals such as Molly, or that share right. qualities with Molly, but then also that you love them enough to make sure that you exhaust the resources to make sure you depict them out of love and out of respect. That quality there, I feel like that's what we talk about when we talk about diverse books and needing more diverse books, is that I think to do it really, really well, they need to come from a place of love. And those are not all experiences that we all have. So I think it's hard to do that. I could say that I think that it's important that I write a book about, you know, we need more books with children that struggle with OCD. So why not me write them? But I don't have any experience. So that's not where my brain readily draws. I have lots of other experience with lots of other things that children go through. And so I feel like that there is the magic, Ellie. The magic is that you were drawn into writing and that you looked around your life and you said, this is the character. This is Molly's people. This is who I need to write about. I mean, that's for me, like what it's all about, is that, that you did feel called to write this story, and hopefully other people will feel called to be brave. And as you put it, to listen to your characters and not try to write them one way, but to go in this direction where you might be treading new ground, but knowing that you love your characters enough and you love those people in your life enough to make sure that you'll do it really, really well, and to trust that you'll do it well.
Why? Thank you. It was very important to me. That was, if I couldn't do it authentically, respectfully, and with love, then I wasn't going to do it at all, because I felt that it really had to be done right. And I'm the International OCD Foundation, for anyone who has OCD or is researching OCD, is a phenomenal resource, a resource that I used, and one that families can use if they are facing challenges or have questions or need guidance. And Matthew, the other thing, you know, this book is about Molly, and she does have OCD, but two things about that. She is not, and to me, this is one of my, you know, biggest takeaways of the book. She is not OCD. Right. She is not just one thing. Like, there's no child who is one thing. And I think when I wrote this, I mean, that is a big piece of it for me, is that yes, she has OCD. Yes, it has impacted her life, and it is challenging and will remain challenging, hopefully more at times and not constantly. And she will, I believe years down the road, Molly is doing great. So
I love that.
I do. And but she's a lot of other things. She's a sister, and she's a friend, and she is smart, and she loves math. Like, there are a lot of parts of her. And I, you know, for kids who are reading this, if they have OCD or they wear glasses or they have another, you know, challenging, they have a challenging family situation. I mean, everybody has something, but yes, Nobody is just that one thing. And right. I feel like, to me, you know, Molly is representative of that because she has OCD, but hopefully relatable to a lot of kids who have either just their own thing that they're dealing with. It could be a family situation. It could be a medical situation, or something with a friend. They have their own thing they're dealing with, and they're figuring out how to blend it in with the rest of their life and not make their life about that one particular thing. I feel like everybody, especially in middle school, life is so, kids tend to define things. Everything is so concrete and it's so definitive. And I feel that, I hope that this book can be illustrative that nobody is really just one thing.
No, it's all a child with. I mean, I think about my son. Yep. My son is a child with food allergies, but that's not who he is. It's something that defines him. And when he owns it, it can be a really beautiful thing that he knows that it sets him apart. But right. But it's one of those things that you should allow yourself to be set apart, not others to set you apart.
Right.
Yeah, I like it. I like what you've done here. I really do. And I like the when we step away and look at the book itself, too, I think the design of the book is really beautiful. I think that FSG has really handled your story in a really wonderful way. I love that when they sent it to me, actually, speaking of which, I've never forgotten this, when they sent it to me, they sent it with a ruler.
Yes.
Well, the greatest.
Yeah, they've done, I mean, FSG has done an amazing job. I'm working with Joy Peskin, and she's great. And Christy was the one who did the cover, which I love because it's so many elements of the story are in the word perfect on the cover.
So much.
And so, and the spine, I mean, I love it. And I feel so grateful and supported that
Ellie, can we stop for a moment and reflect on the spine of this book? Oh, yeah. Come on.
Matthew,
please.
If you take the cover off, the spine is embossed with a ruler.
Oh, I only have an arc. I don't have I need to get the. Oh, wow. Oh,
Matthew, I'm sending you a copy tomorrow.
Oh.
And because when you take the cover off, and I didn't know this till I got my books, which was a surprise anyway. They came early from Joy, and I'm a crier if you haven't picked up on that. And I opened the box and completely unraveled in a very good, happy way, but yeah. Unraveled nonetheless. And when I took the cover off, just to kind of see like what the color is of the spine is embossed with a ruler.
Oh,
it was just so cool.
Gosh, that tactile quality to it is just, can you imagine? I love too being a librarian and knowing that 99% of our books are spine facing out, which is fine. But that after years and years of producing books with spines facing out, still the publishing world can surprise us. And
yes.
Wouldn't you know, like, how perfect it is? Of course your book is going to have a ruler on its spine. But, I mean, come on. That's so good.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. I am most grateful. It's so, they did a phenomenal job.
It came together. It was beautiful. Yes. It's a beautiful thing. Your path to being published, your path to, I know that we were talking before recording that you have an agent, that you're represented by the Aaron Murphy Literary Agency. How did that come to you? Is that part of the five novel writing, 15-year expanse? Was it finding Perfect that brought you that connection to your agent, or was it something before that?
No, it was Finding Perfect. Trisha Lawrence is my agent, and Finding Perfect was the book that I sold. I mean, that she took me in on. That was the book I queried her with, and she loved it, thankfully. And she has been an incredible support and just a really wonderful person to help navigate this journey for me. And I'm really happy to share this with her because she's a great agent and a great person. As you and I talked about, the MLA community in general is just an incredibly warm, gracious, supportive group of writers. And it's like a family. So I feel very fortunate to be a part of it.
I can imagine. And to have someone, you said that Trisha has like helped guide you through all this. And all I can think of is, oh, guide you, Ellie. You mean like how your debut novel has custom rulers being made for it? Yeah, that seems like I would need some help guiding me. Because it's this beautiful thing that your debut has connected with so many people, so much so even just at the publishing house that they want to push it forward and celebrate it that way. But I want to go backwards because I'm really curious about this. Maybe it's showing your restraint or your temperance or I don't know what. I love it. But how did you write 5 novels and
have a drawer full of no's and keep going?
I was going to say and find that persistence to keep going, to know when it's the right one that's a beautiful thing, Ellie. And I hope you recognize, I'm sure you do, that that's a really inspiring thing to see that you stayed with it, that you knew that there was the right story for the right publishing house, for the right reader, for the right everything. And you stuck with it. So can you give a little bit of insight into the how and the why?
I think it's a couple of things. Matthew, I look forward to meeting you in person to share this with you more. But as you get to know me, I am a pretty persistent person. And I am the youngest of 2 older brothers. And I was always fiercely independent and determined to prove that I could do like anything.
Yes.
You know, I loved Eloise. I loved Pippi Longstocking. I loved Ramona. These were like, you know, the sassy, mischievous, strong characters in books that I loved. And I think that I take that with me. My mom was always a super confident and always believed in me to the fullest, both of my parents. And I feel I've had a tremendous amount of support. My husband is my best friend. We've been married for 26 years and he's the love of my life. And he has been his unwavering, unconditional belief in me and my sons. I mean, when this journey started, they were in first and fourth grade, I think. And now they're 21 and 24. And they're an inspiration to me. I mean, they were always, no matter what no I got, like, you can do this, Mom. I know you can do this.
My word.
And
you had the greatest cheering squad already. Of course you were ready to write. Of course you were continuing to fight because everyone believed in you and everyone kept feeding that into your dream. How beautiful is that? Oh,
I think they enabled me to believe in myself that I can do this. And, you know, it's not all, there are times, you know, no doesn't feel good when you receive it via FedEx on your 40th birthday. I'm unclear why they couldn't just email me no.
But
I know. Or when you're invited to lunch at out with an editor just so she could tell you no. I'm like, really? I totally thought this was going a different way.
Ellie.
But it's okay because, I mean, along the way I have met some of the most amazing, gracious, wonderful friends and people in this writing community, you know, from MLA to Sweet 16ers to other people I've met through the VCFA writing retreat. Like, there have just been some incredible friendships I've made. And there were times I'm like, okay, if this doesn't work, then at least I have, the takeaway is I've made some incredible friendships and, you know, those are forever friends. If you just want something badly enough, there were times I was like, I think this is, you know, I just kept doing something else. As I said, I started a business, raised my kids. And you just keep writing because, Matthew, like, I just, there was no not writing.
Yes. You had to.
I mean, when Molly pops in my head, what was I going to do? You know what? I'm like busy today. I can't really do this.
These characters are coming. There's no way you can. I mean, that's the greatest part. I'm writing down. There was no not writing. There was. No,
I'm fairly certain that's not good English, but I just feel
I
like that's,
it.
But that's, I mean, at the end of the day, no matter how hard it may have been, and I always gave myself like a 48-hour window to like feel badly for myself.
Yes.
To eat whatever Twizzlers I wanted and to just lament that it was a no. And then I just ended up always back in my chair
Yeah,
writing.
and when those characters are there and you have that persistence, the persistence of the thought of the story, the persistence of a character that wants their story to be told, and that you feel like maybe I'm the one that needs to tell it. I mean, that's a thing that you can't ignore. Or maybe I should put it from the other way. I'm a writer as well, so I have that feeling as you do that I can't ignore it. I don't know how you don't write it down. But
Right.
imagine, though, that there are plenty of people that just like push it down and go, no, that's not for me. That's just trivial. That's just whatever. I mean, I feel like I'm glad that you have allowed your characters to be persistent and to tell their stories to you, and for you to mine those stories and work on them and craft them so that you can share them with us. Because that's,
I feel like,
yeah.
No. I feel like it's a privilege and an honor to write their stories.
There you go.
I feel very strongly that it's not my, it's an opportunity that's been given to me, and I shouldn't squander it.
It's, you got a good head on your shoulders, Ellie. One that I'm gonna
Thank
be,
you.
I'm gonna be listening to for a long time. I'm gonna be looking up to you for a long time. I am so grateful that you put time aside tonight to talk to me, that you shared this book with me, that you, I'm grateful that you're the person behind this story, because you're the right person to tell Molly's story. I could tell, I know 100%, not just from reading the story, but now from knowing you. It makes me love her even more. So thank you, Ellie, so much for this contribution already that you've made to our readers and to their lives, and for all of the future ripples that it'll have in the lives of these readers.
Thank you so much, Matthew, for having me on All the Wonders podcast. I mean, it's an incredible resource, and I feel most grateful to be able to participate in it tonight. And it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, well, you know where we're going now. I've done all the selfish talking, and now it's time to give you a chance to talk to the kids. So, are you ready? I know you're ready. You told me you've prepared for this.
I
love that. I was tickled by that. So,
well, I'm a listener, so you know.
True. I need to start at some point owning up that there are at least two or three people that actually listen to the show.
There are a lot of us out there listening, paying attention, and enjoying it.
Well, thank you very much. My cheeks are thoroughly red. Let's turn it back to you. Ellie, I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
So the message I'd love to share, and it's one we touched on tonight, but it is, to me, one of the most important things I can share with kids, is that no one is just one thing. You're not just OCD. You're not just glasses or braces or football or theater or singing. You are a brave, wonderful blend of all of it. So own it, be brave, dig in, and just be who you are and be true to who you are always.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Andrea Davis Pinkney joins me to share a poem for Peter, the story of Ezra Jack Keats and the creation of the snowy day. It's also episode number 300. It's a big deal. Make sure you come back. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.